mani kurci. Yang nari benci ni itu kan ipoi luat kena kurna wajah pakai ni. Jalka ngadu tanda nyangga in barendi kan yatanga. Mona ngawangga dei mani na borne ngadu ko yatanga. Koma ngadu ko pukiana mena tapinga. Kulang ngawangga dei mani na borne tandanya benci lencelana wangan doana. Greetings everybody, my name is Jack Buckskin, a proud Kaurna, Narunga and Wurrungal man. Today we stand on the Adelaide CBD in Kaurna country. Firstly, I welcome you to our country and pay respects to our spiritual ancestors as we all should. And next, I welcome you to the Adelaide Writers' Week.
All right, I'm Axel Clark, I'm 15 years old. And I go to Tempe High School in Sydney. I'm the host of the Hey History podcast, and today, this show with you is going to be a podcast. So you'll be able to listen to it in the podcast app or on YouTube if you prefer. We're going to record this, but first, can you guys help us out by saying two things? First, the podcast name. So I want you guys, all of you, to say as loud as you can, Hey History, and I'm going to count down to three, and I want count down from three, and I want all of you to just yell it out, okay? Think we can do that? Let me go. All right. 3, 2, 1. Great job. That was very overwhelming. Great job. I did not think it would be that loud. Awesome. So there's one more thing I want you guys to say, and then we'll do it with the recording, with us speaking. Can you guys say, we're on Kaurna country in three, Kaurna country. 3, 2, 1. Great job. So I'm just going to practice that one time. I'm going to go 3, 2, 1. Hey, history. I'll do that more. So I'm going to start. We're going to start recording. Then I'm going to go. Then you've got to say, hey, history, as loud as you can. Then I'm going to talk and introduce the podcast. Then I'm going to point to you. Remember this. This is your job. And you're going to say, we're on Kaurna country. So I'm going to go 3, 2, 1, hey, history, and then talk, point to you, we're on Kaurna country. Do you think we can do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Hey, history!
Hey, history is a podcast all about Australian history, where the kids ask the questions. I'm your host, Axel Clark. In this special bonus episode, we're coming to you from Schools Day at 2025 Adelaide Writers Week. So, where are we, everyone? We've got some special guests to you today. Anna, Claire and Kira, can you introduce yourselves?
Hey, everyone. My name's Anna Clark. I'm a professor of history at the University of Technology in Sydney.
And I am Claire Wright, and I'm a professor of history at La Trobe University in Melbourne.
G'day, 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 all you beautiful South Australians. My name is Kira Lindsay and I am the State Historian. I'm based at the History Trust of South Australia and you might have been to one of our museums. We look after the Migration Museum, the Maritime Museum and the National Motor Museum. Has anyone been to any of those? There you go. And we also look after the Centre of Democracy. So my title is the History Advocate, but you can call me the History Avocado, because I'm green and mushy inside.
Thanks, guys. So I want everyone to think back to first grade when you had show and tell. Does anybody still have show and tell that we've done recently? I want you to raise your hand if that's something you do. Okay, most of you. Think back to show and tell when everyone's sitting in a circle. Some of you would probably have it in class, we say there. Maybe it's the thing you would bring in, the favourite thing in your room, something really special to you. But what is it and what does it tell us about you? So I want everyone now to picture what you would bring into show and tell in your head right now. I want you to picture what you would bring in, something in your room, maybe a pet, maybe if they still allow that, maybe something that's really special to your life that makes you who you are. And while you're doing that, I'm going to ask Kira, what is something that's special to you? What would you bring into show and tell?
Thanks, Axel. Well, I've got the thing that I wanted to bring along today is a notebook. And this notebook is about the size of my hand and it's got a dark green plastic cover. My name is written on the inside on the very first page and it's underlined. But it's not my handwriting because I didn't write it. It was written for me, not by me. The author was my grandma, and she wrote it just before she died. And because I didn't get to say goodbye to her in person, this is a very, very special object to me. My grandma was an opera singer. That photo there is of her on the stage. And she loved music, but she was also pretty scary. But she and I were quite close, and she loved music, and she wanted me to love music too. So in this book, she's telling me all about how to learn to love music and to be an artist. And there's a little quote in here that's special. And she says, "Learn to be an artist, Kira. Make a positive, good impression with your whole self. And always remember to smile your delightful smile." Now, my grandma might look posh, but actually, she came from a really poor background. Her dad was a railway worker. And so this is really special to me in so many ways.
So why did you choose this thing, and what does it tell us about you?
Well, you know, it is one of my very most precious, precious objects. And it is because it's a reminder of my grandma, of our special connection together. And whenever I go on stage like this, to stop myself getting nervous, I think about my grandma being a great performer. And I ask her to come and sit with me and keep me company. And I also try and remember, Axel, to smile my delightful smile.
I think we can all learn from that. It's so cool that you have an object that can just tell us about yourself, because it's a really important thing, because although it is just an object and it might not mean much to anyone else, it can define Kira here. It can define you as a person, and it can help you understand who you are.
So you know how before Axel asked you to think in your own heads of something that was very special to you? So just like Kira has told us about the object that is special to her, if anybody would like to tell us about their object, throw your hand up and a volunteer will come and get you and bring you to the microphone. So that hand up went very quickly. Yep, that one. And there's another person in a hat. Sorry, I'll get you to take this person from the front here in the blue hat. Yeah, you come up. Yep, you, honey. And is there one... Oh, no, up to that microphone there, hon. And is there one more person? There's a person spinning her hat around who's desperate to come. Come, love.
Why don't you tell us about your special object and what it tells us about you?
Right before my great-grandmother died, she gave me a very special snow globe that is still in my room.
And what happens when you shake that snow globe up?
It just reminds me of her.
Aww. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
This is not really an item, but my special thing is my cat. I've had him for 8 years now. And, he is really special to me.
Thank you for sharing that. And we won't do this to your cat, but you often do find in museums that there are stuffed animals from the past.
Thank you.
My special object is like of a fairy catcher, because I used to have nightmares like a lot. And me and my mum also made it. We didn't just buy it, we made it.
That is a very special object. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Is there anyone else? We've probably got time for one or two more.
It's that little girl with the red hair. She put her hand.
I reckon we should get one more person from this side as well. There's underrepresentation here.
We're being too unfair to the right side. You can see that I'm pointing at you. Come up. And
the boy
at the back with the apple juice. This is great. We're loving hearing about these. Okay, can you tell us about your special object?
My special object is a stuffed bunny that was my grandfather's. So he disappeared, like he didn't come back when my dad was two, and it was given to my dad, then it was given to me, my sister, and then now my brother has it.
Mm. That is so wonderful when an object gets passed on like that in a family. Thank you for sharing.
It's an amazing story too, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, thank you.
My special object I'll bring will be my dad's military store-bought outfit in 1980, when he used to be in year 8.
And why is that outfit special to you?
Because it reminds me, like, of his olden time in school.
Yeah. For some people, 1980 is the olden days.
It is. It's a good reminder, and in 100 years' time, it will definitely be the olden days.
Absolutely.
And your dad's school uniform might end up in a museum.
Probably.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you so much for telling us about your favourite things. So, some other words for the stuff we're talking about might be things or objects or artefacts. But just like we collect stuff, museums also collect objects. But why? Anna, Claire and Kira, can you tell us about why museums... why do museums collect objects and artefacts, essentially? And what can objects teach us about the past?
Great question, Axel. Objects really help us to understand how people in the past lived. Just like you shared your objects from your own lives, objects from people's lives in the past help give us clues and information and evidence about people in how people in the past lived and the sorts of things they did, what they got up to, what they did for work, how they went to school. Some historical objects, like Kira's notebook, might only be from a few years ago. But other objects, like these pieces of ochre here, can tell us about First Nations histories that are tens of thousands of years old, long before there even were any museums. So we can see here some pieces of coloured ochre, which used to get crushed up and mixed with maybe water or spit or blood to paint with. And our Hey History episode, The Oldest Classroom, has some great information about ochre painting. Ochre, like these pieces in the National Museum of Australia, was used and is still used in painting in rock shelters, on bark, and even on people's bodies. And those paintings help to tell us stories and share useful information and also share images. Just like this PowerPoint here that you're looking at right now.
So the other thing about objects is that they can act as evidence. So for historians like Anna and Kira and I, evidence is often found in things like diaries and newspapers and letters and other pieces of paper where we can go looking for what happened in the past, proof of what happened in the past. But we can use objects for that proof as well. And the example I want to share with you is this gold pan. So this is a gold pan that would have been used in the gold rushes here in Australia. And the gold rushes mostly happened in around the 1850s. That's when they started. And they went on for a long time, and there was different forms of technology that was used to get the gold out of the ground. But in the early days, the diggers who came to Australia from all over the world would have used a pan like this. So if I was to describe this pan, I would say that it's round, that it's made of metal, some kind of tin. It's probably not that heavy because people would have had to have carried it from somewhere like Melbourne where they arrived on a ship and then walked up to the gold fields in Ballarat or in Bendigo if you were in Victoria.
So there are no cars then?
No cars. You were lucky if you were able to afford to hire a bullock, a horse, to carry your gear. But most families, including kids, walked to the gold fields, and it could take them about a week for that to happen. Imagine walking for a week and having just to sleep every night by the side of your horse if you were lucky. So they would have carried this kind of gold pan. In terms of size, it's probably about the size of a wok, an item that we can find really useful these days. And in the gold rushes, this would have been the most useful item because it was used to drag through the rivers, and you would spin it around in your hand and you would then pour off the water and all of the muck, it was called mullock, and the rocks and the silt and the dirt. And what you would hope was that at the end there would be some glittering pieces of gold left in your pan. But everyday objects like this can help us understand how people lived in the past. Just like we understand how a wok helps us live today. So we understand the technology they used and we understand the purposes that these very simple everyday items were used for. And if I think about one of the items that I would use pretty much every day, I'd like to say less than this, but pretty much every minute, is my phone, for example. And you might have iPads at school, or you might have a fidget spinner that you play with, or even like the petrol pump that your mum and dad might have had to use to fill up the car on your way to school. These objects that we think of just being pretty boring every day, we don't think of being special anyway, they actually might be evidence in the future, proof for future historians about how you guys lived today. And that's amazing to think, but these objects might end up in museums in 100 years' time.
Imagine your grandchildren going to a museum and seeing your iPhone there. And imagine how amazing that would be, thinking that although we're living like this, people hundreds of years ago were living our everyday lives, what they considered everyday, and their everyday objects ended up to be our things that we study, that we look at in a museum. And that, I think, is really amazing.
Thanks, Axel. Now, has anybody here seen this object before? Oh, that's great. A couple of you have. Fantastic. Well, it's a pretty famous object in South Australia. It is an object that belongs to the History Trust of South Australia. We care for this object. And actually, you can usually find it by going up to the Centre of Democracy. So if you go and visit there, you should be able to see it. Now, what we're looking at is a pair of pretty short shorts, right? And they're also kind of pink. They belong to a man and were tailor-made right up there on Hindley Street in Adelaide. But they didn't just belong to any man. Does anyone know who they belong to? They belong to...
A random dude.
We had a wonderful guest then, a random dude. Actually, it wasn't a random dude. It was the Premier of South Australia in the 1970s, and his name was Don Dunstan. Does anybody know who the Premier of South Australia is now? You can yell it out if you do.
A random dude.
It's Peter Malinauskas, and he probably looked pretty good in these shorts too, come to mention it. But the thing about these shorts, which is so incredible, and why they're history-making shorts, right, is because the 1970s was a world where people, especially men, were still wearing pretty serious suits, especially politicians like Don Dunstan. When they went to Parliament, they had to dress up very seriously so people would take them seriously. And it was a really hot day in November in 1972 when Don Dunstan turned up at Parliament in these shorts with white socks and a white T-shirt, and his staff were terrified and shocked. And all day they did everything that they could do to try and shield him from the public and the press. They didn't want anybody to see him in his fancy pink shorts. But Don Dunstan wasn't the sort of guy who liked to hide away from the limelight. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he snuck away from everyone and went and stood on the steps of Parliament House in his beautiful pink shorts, and the press was there and they took a photo of him. Now, people were so amazed by this figure of the Premier in these shorts, in his pink shorts, that the photo went on the front page of newspapers all over the world. It's even said that it featured in the Zambia press in Africa. Can you believe that? Anyway, it said, Dazzling Don Dunstan does it again. And they were kind of astonished by his audacity, how bold he was to wear these bright pink shorts and to break the kind of rules of how you're meant to dress as a politician in Parliament. But these shorts now have come to symbolise a lot of different things, because while Don Dunstan was Premier, he worked really hard to fight for justice. He wanted to create a fairer world for Aboriginal people, for women, for our migrant communities, for the queer community, for everybody. And he achieved such a lot that for a long time in the 1970s, South Australia was considered the most progressive place in all of Australia. So for South Australians today, those shorts still stand for South Australia leading the way when it comes to justice and reform. They really matter to us. But I love these shorts too because they do a couple of things. They make you look closer. Now, you might think that they're pink shorts, right? How many people think they're pink shorts? Hands up. All right. Well, that's what the press said. The press all said, Don Dunstan's wearing hot pink shorts. But in fact, Don Dunstan, when he asked for these shorts to be made, he thought that they were dull rose. And when textile experts come in, they say that these shorts are burgundy and cream. And so that to me, it tells me, one, we've got to look really, really closely. But two, even when we look at things, we all see the world a little bit differently. And that's a really important lesson for historians. We're never going to see the same event, the same thing in the same way. We need to keep open minds and be very curious and open eyes too.
Just to recap everything, Anna and Claire told us about some ways that objects can teach us about the past. But how and what do we learn from them? Well, one way that we were told is how we can ask questions about them. And we're going to play some games, question and answer games, with you to prove that.
Are you guys ready for a game? Yeah. Okay, Claire and Kiri need to turn away because we're going to show, we're going to have a do you know the celebrity heads game? Where you ask yes or no questions and you've got someone's name on your... Okay, so we're going to play the celebrity object game where... Claire and Kira are going to ask yes or no questions. We're going to show an object on the screen, so no yelling out because we can't show them what it is, and we're going to play celebrity object. They're going to yell out questions to you and you have to answer yes or no, and we'll see if they're clever enough to ask enough descriptive questions about the object to finally guess the special historical object that we're going to play on the screen. Okay, so here's the object.
Do not tell them.
Just don't tell them.
I trust you.
Okay, no cheating, guys, or you'll be booted off the stage. Can you start yelling or, asking some questions to our very learned audience about what this object might look like? They have to be yes or no questions.
Okay, I'll go first. Is this object made by humans?
Yes!
Okay, you ready? Would you be dead without this object?
Yes!
Okay. Would you be dead? Yes.
Mostly said yes.
I heard mostly yeses there. Yeah. So you would be dead without this object. All right. Can you eat it?
No!
Does it smell? So it doesn't smell and you'd be dead without it.
And you can't eat it.
But it's useful.
Is it bigger than my head?
Claire, how big is your head?
How big is your head?
It's pretty big, most people would say.
Maybe.
That's a maybe. All right. Fair enough.
So it's about the size of your head, maybe.
So size of a head, you'd be dead without it. And it's useful and it's made by humans and it doesn't smell and you can't eat it. Is that right? You can't eat it. Okay. So is it made from plastic?
No.
Is it made from wood?
No.
Is it made from leather?
Yes.
Okay, good one. All right. Now that was pretty all right. Would you be sad if you lost it?
What would you or would you not be sad? You would be sad. It depends. It depends, doesn't it? Huh? I think I know what it is. You can't eat it.
Hang on. Can you drink out of it?
Yeah!
All right, there you go.
I think that was might be if it's made from leather and you can drink from it, but you can't eat it and it doesn't smell. I reckon it might be. An old-fashioned water bottle.
Yeah!
You guys would make great historians with your excellent object questions. That's right. What you're looking at, as you can see here, is an old, very old leather water bottle with a horn lid. It's really creased. It's crinkled. It looks aged, like it's been dug up from somebody's garage. It was used by the explorer, Robert O'Hara Burke, on his 1860 to 1861 expedition, where he walked all the way from Melbourne to the very north of Australia.
Didn't he die?
Yes, he did, which gives you an indication of what sort of explorer he was. Has anyone heard of the story of Burke and Wills before, or the story of Robert? Put up your hand if you've heard of Burke, yeah? Do you want to come and, if you know anything about it, say what you've heard about it?
He died.
He died.
Yeah.
Well, you're very...
That's what you knew. He
you're
died.
Dead right then. Yes, he did die. So in 1860, most of the continent of Australia was still unknown to the colonial population. Of course, Aboriginal people knew it for many years. Yeah. So while the colonial population didn't know what was really in the interior of the continent of Australia, Aboriginal communities, of course, had been there for tens of thousands of years. They knew what it was like. But for the other colonists, they offered a really big prize to anybody who could walk across Australia from south to north. Burke and Wills, who was also on that expedition, managed to get to the north coast, but they died of starvation on their way home. Neither of them had any experience with walking or exploring or being in the desert. They spent about £9,000, which was nearly $1 million in today's money, getting ready for the expedition. And they took so much stuff with them that it took them ages to do their walk, which is partly why they died. They took dandruff brushes. They took a table and chairs. They took 9.1 kilograms of chocolate. And they took a bathtub. Would anyone here take a bathtub on a hike?
I'd take the chocolate.
Yeah, but it would melt,
look,
wouldn't it?
Anyone that brings... What did you say?
They obviously have sweet
treats. Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, I was going to say, anyone that brings 9 kilograms of chocolate on a bushwalk is my kind of person, yeah. So...
But the chocolate would have melted.
Maybe they ate it really quickly.
Yeah, right.
They would have...
They could have took the bathtub on the horse, that's right, or the camel, in fact. Claire, I'm interested to know how this object came into the National Museum of Australia.
Yeah, I can tell you that, Anna, because I'm the chair of the National Museum of Australia, which is in Canberra. And this object was actually found at the place where Burke died. And it was found by one of the people who'd been sent out as part of the rescue party to find Burke and Wills after they had gone missing and they didn't return home in time. And so it's like when you don't get home in time for dinner, you're... Parents are worried about you and they send out a rescue party. That's what happened. By the time they got to them, they were dead, but they did find this water bottle. And it was held in a private collection, which means that it was just owned by a family. It could have been one of your families. Until about 2005, when the National Museum of Australia bought it at auction. And obviously they did a lot of background checks to make sure it was the actual original one. And they bought it for about $286,000.
Wow.
And which shows you how something that at the time you might not think of as very valuable in time can become valuable in a monetary sense. And if you guys go to Canberra, you can see this object on display at the museum, or you can also see it online when you get back to class and whip out your iPads.
So, Claire and Kira, what can we learn from this water bottle?
What's the evidence?
The evidence. So, if you were looking for proof of something or evidence, I think this water bottle tells us quite a few things. It tells us that in the 1860s, that exploration of the continent was really important to the settler colonists who had arrived. They were going out, they were trying to map the country because they didn't understand it and they didn't have maps already, so somebody had to make them. It also shows us that British people had a lot of difficulty finding water. I mean, there were no petrol stations to go and fill up your water bottle. I can see all of you guys have got your water bottles in your hand here, and you've just been able to go to a tap to fill them up. But they didn't have anything like that. As I said, they didn't have maps to show them where to go. And they also had a lot of trouble being able to appreciate and respect the fact that First Nations people did know where to find water. And if they had have listened to the advice of the First Nations people that they encountered, maybe they wouldn't have died. So I also think that what this shows us is that even though something doesn't look very special to us, it can be a really incredibly important piece of equipment, because without it, you would die. So, yeah, you would be sad if you lost it. Mm.
Thanks, Claire. You know, you could kind of tell the whole history of Australia is a history of water. Water scarcity, we know about that in South Australia, right? Water sharing, water wars. Without water, we're in really big trouble. But I like this object as well, because most of the records often we think about with history, we think about as written records, like my grandma's notebook, right? But in fact, objects can tell us a whole different kind of history. I like to think of them as portals into the past. And that's really important because not everybody could read and write English, so they couldn't leave records behind. If you're perhaps First Nations or you're a younger kid like you and you haven't learned to read or write yet, you might not have left any paper records behind. So objects then can give us another way of understanding how people lived in the past. At the History Trust, we have over 30,000 objects that tell the South Australian story. They tell your story, the story of your parents and your grandparents, and they offer a kind of really personal, tactile, touch and feel way of understanding the past.
Mm. And at the National Museum, we have over 250,000 objects that tell those kinds of stories about the whole of Australia.
Is anyone ready for another game?
Yeah! Okay, I'm going to lead this game off. And this is a different kind of game. This is called the Slow Reveal game. And what we're going to do is we're going to start by showing a picture of something super up close, almost like it's under a microscope, okay? And then we're going to slowly zoom out from it. And what we're going to ask you to do is tell us what you see. And so what this game helps teach us about is the importance of looking closely at the object and asking lots of questions about it and describing it in detail, as we've been trying to do about our favourite objects today. So what I'm going to ask you to do is for a couple of you kids to go up to the microphone.
Put your hands up if you want to ask a question. We'll choose three kids.
And that kid had his hand.
Okay, so, yep, you with the water bottle at the front there. I'm going to try to get one from each of the schools. So, yep, you with your hat on at the back there, that's awesome. And you've got a very, very strong hand up. Yep, you at the front there, you can see me pointing at you? Yeah, you, yes, you. And you can too, yep, you at the front here. Great, so I think we've got all the schools covered.
Mmm, what right. are we seeing here?
So, can you tell us something that you see, something about the texture, or just describe a detail of what you see?
I can see, like, some little kind of nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like a carpet zoomed in.
Interesting. Looks like a carpet zoomed in.
Fabric.
Do you think we need another clue?
Yes.
Should we zoom out?
I think
one
we should move
time?
On to one more person's observation.
Okay, yeah. We get one more person. Do you want to have another little go at describing?
It looks to me like garlic.
Fantastic. And why is that? Is it like something about the colour or
ginger? Either one. Mm.
Garlic or ginger.
I see what you mean. I see it.
Yeah, I see it. Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah. We've zoomed out. So now what you tell us what you describe what you can see.
It looks like like a lamb's wool.
Whoa.
What makes you say that?
Because I've seen lamb and it looks like very familiar like that.
Does that mean it looks fluffy or
does it?
It looks
like fluffy and the textures looks like a lamb's wool.
Do you think it would smell?
I don't know.
Okay, let's zoom out one more and see whether we can... Oh, my goodness.
You were
what
right.
Do you so what is it looking like now?
A lamb?
Yeah.
Well, was there anyone else who didn't talk yet?
That was that girl on the blue.
Do you want to come and tell us what you see there and what it looks like?
It looks like a loaf of bread a bit.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Now that we've zoomed all the way out, it looks like a loaf of bread.
It just really shows what Kira said earlier about everything looks different to whoever's looking at it. It all means different things to us because we're all different people.
I was thinking exactly that same point there, Axel. It totally, totally illustrates what you were saying, is that we all bring a different set of eyes and a different set of reference points to what we see. Nothing is necessarily proof on its own, is it, without our interpretation. So can I tell you the story of this?
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. You were great. Yeah. Let me tell you what we are actually looking at, okay? So it's not garlic. It's not ginger. It's not a loaf of bread.
I think a lamb's wool was basically almost spot on.
But the person who said it was lamb's wool and got that from one of the really early clues was spot on, because this actually is the fleece from one single sheep. And this sheep had a name. The sheep that this fleece belonged to, his name was Chris. And Chris was found in the bush outside of Canberra in 2015. And his fleece, that means his wool, was so heavy that he could barely walk. So you know what had happened to Chris? Because he'd been lost and he hadn't been shorn, his wool just kept growing and growing and growing. So it's a bit like maybe your dad or your uncle or your big brother. If they've got a shave but they don't shave, it's a bit like their beard growing down to their toes. And just like your dad might trip over his beard if he didn't shave, poor old Chris could barely walk by the time they found him. He was rescued just in time. And so he was shorn. And he was taken to a sanctuary, and he lived very happily till he died there at an old age in 2019. So you can go to the museum in Canberra and you can see this fleece. And something that you can imagine how big it might be, it's a bit hard to tell from this picture actually how big it is, but really the important thing is how much it weighs, because this fleece weighs 41.1 kilograms.
What?
And to give you a bit of an idea about that, that's probably about how much the whole of Uxel over there weighs.
So if we think about how light wool is, it is not a heavy object.
So it's like poor old Chris the sheep was dragging Uxel around on his back every single minute of every single day. Now, this fleece is so heavy, it actually is in the Guinness Book of Records for the world's heaviest fleece. And his owner became quite famous for having the sheep with the biggest fleece. So think about that when you pat your cats and dogs when you go home tonight. Think about poor old Chris the sheep.
So... who wants to see Chris? We have a photo here. Does anyone want to see Chris? All right.
Oh,
Chris, my goodness. Look, that's a tiny little head carrying around a lot of wool.
He must have been so hot.
What was that? Oh, I don't think we have.
You
I think
can go
the only
onto
photo
the National Museum website.
If you go onto the National Museum website, you can see more photos of Chris the sheep. And if you go to Canberra, you can see it at the museum yourselves.
I'm also sure if you have access to Google and a web browser, you can probably Google Chris the sheep and it'll show you some...
There's only one Chris the sheep.
There's only one Chris the sheep. That's right. So I do want to ask this. How did Chris's wool get so long? Because it... like a beard, I understand it grows, but it... I've never seen a beard that long. How does it grow?
Yeah, well, I guess it's really unlike beards, which are not really worth very much. Sheep wool is worth a lot. And so for economic reasons, we bred sheep in Australia not to naturally shed their wool. They grow and grow and grow so that they can be shorn every year. And that's how they make money, by selling the wool.
So why is Chris's fleece in a museum, though? Why would they put in a museum and not held by a private owner or held elsewhere?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the story of Chris the Sheep does tell us. It's an amazing story and it's in the Guinness Book of Records and that's incredible. But it also is, again, what we're talking about, evidence of something about the past as well. Because as Anna just said, the reason that in Australia we bred this particular kind of merino wool is because until the discovery of gold in the 1850s, where you had to use those pans, they became important, as I was saying before. Before then, sheep farming was the most important industry for white settler colonists. It provided really important food source, but it also provided the money to the early colony. That was what the economy was based on. And that's why it's often said that Australia rode on the sheep's back. But the problem was that you need a lot of land in order to run sheep. And so in order to have that scale of grazing, the white settler colonists had to take the land off the First Nations people. Effectively, they stole that land. And there were violent contests over grazing land. Just as Kira said before, there were a lot of fights over water supplies. There was also fighting over the land. And many, many thousands of Aboriginal people were killed defending their land.
And that's why a guy like Chris, who just seems like an ordinary sheep, is in the National Museum of Australia today.
What's the evidence?
So, just to wrap up, why do historians use objects?
How do we really know?
Objects are like little presents from the past, and they can teach us so much, as some of the objects that we've been talking about today show. One way that objects can teach us about the past is due to the questions that we ask of them. We have to ask lots of questions about the objects that we use as historians.
And I think the thing that we've really seen today as well, and just the way that this whole conversation has folded out, is that they help us tell the story of humans as well, because objects don't tell stories. They haven't got mouths. They can't talk.
Is there another side to the story?
People tell stories, not objects. And so there can be lots of different ways to tell a story. And the way that we tell the story changes over time or changes according to how we see the objects in front of us.
Thanks, Claire.
What new questions can we ask?
Well, I guess the other thing about objects is that they tell history in a really different way from paper documents. They are like a kind of portal into the past. And there's something special about going to a museum and seeing an object. And even if you work in a museum, you sometimes get to touch those objects and you feel so connected with the time and place when that happens. Those objects might tell a really simple story, like the story of me and my grandma, or they might tell a story, a big famous story like Don Dunstan's shorts, that are there to inspire us to be bold, to be ourselves, and to fight together for the things that matter. But either way, those objects are full of stories about the past, and it's our job to find those stories and share them with one another.
That's it from us today, I'm afraid, but we really hope you enjoyed this special live recording of Hey History. Please thank our guest, Kira Lindsay. And thank you so much for coming today to talk about historical objects. I'd also like to say thank you to Jane at the back there. This could not happen without her.
Woo, Jane!
Thanks, guys. But thank you so much for coming, guys.
And if you've enjoyed what you've heard today and you want to hear more of what we do, you can go to the Hey History podcast series, which can be found on anywhere where you get your podcast. You can listen to it in class or in the car with mum and dad. And we think there's a lot of stories there that you'll enjoy hearing.
You've been listening to Hey History. Hey, have you heard about other episodes of Hey History? You can listen to them in any order. There's The Oldest Classroom, First Meeting in Kamei Botany Bay, and Convict Kids. And a bonus episode for your teacher, How to Talk with Kids About Australian History. Go to heyhistory.net.
Hey History!
Hey History is made on Gadigal Country by Anna Clark, Claire Wright, Jane Curtis, and Brittany Jorgensen. It's endorsed by the History Teachers Association of New South Wales. And your host is me, Axel Clark. Executive producers are Claire Wright and Anna Clark. podcast concept, design, and development by Anna Clark. Thanks to all the students whose voices you hear in this episode, and their schools and teachers. Hey History is produced by the Australian Centre for Public History and Impact Studios at the University of Technology, Sydney. Impact Studios' executive producer is Sarah Gilbert.
Hey History!